Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati, or some people say Cincinnata. Sherry Coolidge. She's Sherry Coolidge. I'm Jason Williams. He, as I'm pointing to him because you can't see it, but he is Silent Phil on the ones and twos. Special guest today, Sherry, former Ohio Governor Bob Taft. Haven't heard, you know, he's kept a low profile since leaving office in early 2007, and looking forward to catching up with him.
Same. I mean, I, you know, really invited him to be a guest. We want to talk about, he's on the State Park Foundation board, and it's very new and their work. But I mean, this is kind of a political podcast. So let's, well, I feel like there's some tough questions, and we'll see if he answers.
We got lots of good questions for him. We'll ask him about Trump. We'll ask him about Mike DeWine, Maureen O'Connor, the Taft family. Lots of good stuff we got, we want to ask him about. He'll join us momentarily. But first, Sherry, 100 days of the new administration at Cincinnati City Hall.
100 days, a little bit of an artificial marker, but, you know, the mayor himself has been really kind of keeping track, wants people to know what he's been doing, and I was willing to take a look then. I feel like this is a very new administration. It's not fair to judge. We're in a honeymoon period because there's no budget. But, you know, there's been a lot of, you know, press conferences and such, and I went back and took a look at, you know, how solid, you know, these accomplishments are and how they've kind of come to be and what they're going to mean to the city. And, you know, I took a look at the personality of the mayor and how important that is to the city, compared it to, you know, our past directly elected mayors, really kind of walk back in time to talk about their different styles. So, you know, really, you know, did almost like a whole new profile. And I'm going to say one thing. I had to add a line this morning because he is that mayor who's out there and doing a lot of things. And where was he yesterday? Of course, he was in the opening day parade. Where else was he? Catching a foul ball in Great American Ballpark and then turning around and giving it to a little boy who turned 6 years old. It's quintessential. Mayor Pureball.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, we'll see. He's certainly been out there a lot in press conferences, but we'll see in terms of the record of accomplishment is still TBA. You just spent a day with him, right, recently?
I did. You know, it was just an arbitrary day that we picked. It wasn't done tons in advance where, you know, sometimes, you know, with politicians, they're like, oh, we'll just kind of pack the day. It really seemed like the kind of typical day of what we've seen from him, which is there we did a neighborhood tour. We walked through East Westwood. We went to a soul food restaurant in Westwood at Emma's.
Did you eat there?
We did eat there. Soul food for lunch, the best banana pudding in the history of the world. Not joking. but it was interesting really to kind of get, like, have an up close look at his style. And you know, my takeaway from that is he is such a good listener. Like, okay, he talks and there's press conferences and people are really kind of talking a lot about that. But when we went on this very kind of extensive walking tour, it was in the rain, he was listening to what residents had to say, and he resonates with residents because, you know, he's a tall like when he was walking through the neighborhood, people recognized him. And I would say somebody shouted from across the street, good job, da da da, at him. He waved kind of and everything. And somebody else slowed their car down and said, thank you for coming to look at the problems. There are problems. We need to fix the problems. Fix the problems. And so he really is just, you know, people see him as the mayor and they're responding to him as the mayor. And so it was interesting to see, you know, kind of him in action in the neighborhoods.
That's great. We'll look forward. You got a piece coming on
Cincinnati.com. It'll be out by the time you listen to this.
So go check that out.
I hope. Should be. The 100th day is Friday, the 15th.
Go check that out on Cincinnati.com, and we'll be certainly you'll continue to follow this new council, this new administration, and as budget season vastly approaches, as they have to pass a budget by June 30th, the fiscal year budget, as they get ready to probably unveil that in May. Is that usually when it
Yes. Early and like my whole life is kind of literally like planned around it. Like all these other stories I want to do. And it's like they kind of, I want to get them done before the budget so we can really pay attention to what's happening there.
Watch closely what happens with public safety. I would encourage citizens and people who work and play in the city of Cincinnati. Let's jump over and bring on Governor Bob Taft. Special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast, and really pleased to welcome former governor of Ohio and a Cincinnatian through and through, Bob Taft. Governor Taft, how you doing?
I'm great. It's good to hear you guys down there in Cincinnati.
You still you've been out of the spotlight for a long time now. Obviously, you left office in early 2007, but we were just talking off the air. You still sound great. You still sound the same as when you were governor.
Well, I'm teaching now at the University of Dayton, but I'm having a lot of fun traveling Ohio. Come to Cincinnati a lot, go to Columbus a lot, and keep in touch with all my friends, and particularly the staff that served me when I was governor.
I heard that you had a huge, we don't like to age people on this podcast, but we do. You had a huge 80th birthday party with a lot of people you worked with kind of coming back to celebrate.
Wow, Sharon, you're well informed. It is an 80th birthday party staff reunion, governor's office staff. staff and our cabinet, and actually we have to postpone it because of COVID, so it's coming up at the end of this month, so I'm looking forward to that.
You said you travel the state a lot. What's and I know, and Sherry was telling me you're on the Ohio Park Board Foundation.
That's honestly, I kind of came across this. Jason and I, we're big parks fans. We talk about it on this podcast a long time. You know, heard about this foundation, and we wanted to talk about that a little bit. Felt like we might segue into the state of politics, but I'm very interested in the foundation and what's happening with it.
You know, I'm really excited to be on the board of the Ohio State's Parks Foundation. It was set up about a year ago. Mary Merch, director of ODNR, asked me to serve on it with people like David Pepper and Buck Niehoff from Cincinnati. You know, we have an incredible park system in Ohio. I loved it before I was governor. Used to go up to Hocking Hills with our daughter. Loved it while I was governor. Still love visiting our state parks. I'm out there on the Little Miami State Park, which is really a bike trail from Terrace Park all the way up to Xenia. But we've got 75 state parks, and the it's amazing because they're free. There's no entry fee, there's no parking fee, which is unique, I think, among most states across the country. So the idea of the foundation is to raise a little money, you know, privately, charitable funds, individuals, corporations, foundations, to enhance the visitor experience at the parks, do some of the extras that the state really can't afford. I'll just give you a couple examples. For example, new playground equipment down in Shawnee State Park. And then we're trying to make the parks more accessible to all kinds of persons, including persons with disabilities. So we've acquired for some parks ADA kayaks, picnic tables for ADA, all-terrain hiking chairs to really broaden the experience. And then one of the more recent initiatives is we're creating storybook trails all across Ohio. So children can walk on a trail and really read a book at the same time. The trails are lined with pages from children's books. So they can enjoy the outdoors and also work on their reading, you know, books like Where Butterflies Grow as you walk through a prairie. So the Parks Foundation is just, I thought it's a great idea, and I'm happy to, you know, do whatever I can to help it succeed. And we hope people want to support that because the parks experience is so valuable for all of our citizens across Ohio. A couple of these storybook trails are going to, one's in East Fork State Park, which is close to you, and also Cowan Lakes. So a lot of good things happening through the Parks Foundation and in the parks. And I think we learned from COVID how valuable our parks were, because attendance soared under COVID. People getting into the outdoors, we hope that continues.
I have been kayaking at both of the places that you just mentioned, but I feel like you might be creating a bucket list of sorts, like to visit all 75 state parks. Have you been to them all?
I've been to most of them, but I don't know if I've been to all 75, Sharon. So, you know, I'm working on it.
Governor Taft, you sound like you've been busy. And I know you also, you know, since you left office, you teach law at the University of Dayton, right?
I'm teaching mainly political science, a course about the U.S. Congress, education policy. We have a very exciting summer internship program in Columbus for University of Dayton students. So I'm very involved with that, too. But I've tried to stay active otherwise, you know, on a statewide basis through this Ohio State Parks Foundation. I'm also on the board of a foundation that was created by the Ohio Mayors Alliance, the 30 largest cities in Ohio, including Cincinnati and Dayton. So, you know, I got a lot of things to keep me out of trouble, Jason.
I think he could use some tips on that. I'm just thinking the readers might think that.
Go ahead.
You know, there's a lot kind of said, like, you know, about, you know, local office and then kind of rising to state office. And I was looking back at your background and trying to do some remembering. And you were a Hamilton County commissioner.
Yeah, for 10 years. I started in the state legislature, then county commissioner, then secretary of state. So in our family, we kind of believe in working our way up. You know, that's what my dad did. That's what my grandfather did. You start. I think it's important for people in office to have served locally, if possible, to really understand what are the local issues, what's going on at the grassroots. So my experience as a county commissioner in Hamilton County was really valuable to me as governor, my experience as a state legislator as well. But I've enjoyed all the positions that I've had. I've been very fortunate. I spent 30 years, continuous years, believe it or not, as an elected official in the state of Ohio.
The stories you could tell, I'm sure.
I got a few. I need to work on that book, Sharon, to tell those stories.
It's and I'm glad you brought up your family. And my son is he's 9. He's a big history buff, and we're driving back from a basketball game. I was back in February, and he's like, "Hey, you know about the Taft birthplace?" And I'm like, "Yeah."
Wow.
And I literally used to work a block from it, and I never gone. And I was like, "You want to go?" So we go up to Mount Auburn, and it's fascinating.
I feel blessed to have that kind of a, you know, a family heritage where I can actually, you know, go to the William Howard Taft birthplace and learn all about, you know, William Howard Taft, my great grandfather, and the Taft family. So we're just very fortunate. The older I get, the more I like the family history, and the more I like to talk about it. I give some talks about William Howard Taft. I'm preparing a talk, believe it or not, for the Cincinnati Bar Association about his father, Alfonso Taft, who was the first member of our family to come to Cincinnati back in the 1830s.
And I got a lesson. I referenced your father, former Senator Robert Taft. And I got a lesson in, because there's three generations of officially Robert Tafts, you being the third. I got a lesson from former Inquirer political reporter Howard Wilkinson on the referencing what you guys all like to be referenced as. You're Bob Taft. Your father was not Robert A. Taft Jr., which I referred to in a column, and Howard corrected me. But that was always a big deal, right? Is it? To differentiate all three of the generations?
Yeah, I think my parents made it complicated. So there's too many. And I'm named after my grandfather, Robert A. Taft, from Cincinnati, U.S. Senator, you know, ran for the Republican nomination for president 3 times, never made it. But I'm named after him. But my dad's also Robert. So it's kind of we try to keep people guessing, getting them confused. That's why, just for simplicity's sake, when I ran for office, I just used Bob Taft on the ballot because it was simpler.
Yeah, good ballot name.
Right.
And speaking of politics, today's politics, how do you, I mean, the Trump era of politics as you sit back and watch what's going on, what do you make of it?
Well, it's so polarized. It's so partisan. It's, you know, both sides kind of firing over the barricades at each other, you know, vying for control. And, you know, we've always had two different parties and with different viewpoints, and that's great. But I think that when I was in office, there was far more, you know, bipartisanship, people working across the aisle, trying to get things done. Now, you know, I do think that Senator Portman, who's a friend and someone that I'm going to be very sad to see leave the Senate, I think he's one of those up there in Washington who did work across the aisle and got some good things done. And, you know, some of these people think the other side is like the enemy, or they hate them, or they think they're bad people. And it's really tragic, because to get good, you know, progress done, you know, good bills accomplished, like, you know, the infrastructure bill they passed up there in the Congress recently, in which Senator Corbyn was involved. I mean, it takes work across the aisle to really accomplish, you know, the progress that people want.
Do you feel like even if they wanted to keep getting elected, they can't because it's so frowned upon?
Yeah, and you know, you've heard it all. You know, social media plays a big role, certainly. Unfortunately, you know, the way that the legislative districts are drawn, most districts are either very Republican or very Democrat. There's very few truly competitive districts left anywhere across the country. So then the parties are so evenly matched on a national level, where control shifts, you know, the presidency shifts, the control of the Senate, the control of the House shifts. The two parties are both either trying to stay in power or trying to move into the majority. And so it's like they don't want to allow the other side to have any victories that would help the other side get reelected. And it's not healthy for our democracy. It's not good for the country.
You know, 30 years in elected office, obviously your family, one of the great political families in American history. You teach political science, like you said, at UD. And from your vantage point, where do you think, or why do you think our politics changed? What was the turning point? What was that moment from your viewpoint?
Well, there's several factors. I think Ohio, hasn't been quite as partisan, but it's become, I think, more partisan in recent years. And part of it, quite frankly, is how the districts are drawn. And I think some of our state politicians, they take their cues from the national scene, and the national scene is very polarized. So that's certainly part of it. Partisan redistricting has become a science. And so you have districts where the only battle is not the general election in November, it's the primary battle in May. So if you're a Republican in office, you're worried about an attack from the right in the Republican primary. If you're a Democrat, you're worried about an attack from the left in the Democrat primary. So that pulls the parties apart, and it makes it harder to find the center. It makes it harder for people who are in office to move across the aisle and to work with their colleagues to get good legislation like the infrastructure bill passed.
Do you support Donald Trump? Did you support Donald Trump?
I'm not a big fan. I mean, some policies I like. I like his appointments to the bench, but I'm personally not a big Donald Trump fan. But he's had a huge influence, obviously, on the Republican Party. And you can see that in the U.S. Senate primary to succeed Senator Portman, where, you know, almost all of the candidates are trying to appeal to Donald Trump, trying to secure Donald Trump's endorsement, trying to sound like Donald Trump. So his influence is still there, like it or not.
You reference Senator Portman, and Like you said, you know, very similar styles. You guys have had a good relationship, and you know, a guy who has really tried to work across the aisle, and a statesman through and through. And you've watched him. You've watched him have to kind of maneuver through the Trump era of politics, and how he's had to, you know, I called it in a column, like kind of this two step with Trump. Had you ever given advice on that? Or what have you talked about that? What are your thoughts on how he's handled that?
I think it's a big challenge for someone like Senator Portman. And fortunately, I'm not in office, so I haven't had to deal with that challenge. You know, President Bush was there for much of my term as governor. Senator Portman, I think, has really kept his eye on the ball of what people want him to do, which is, you know, get bills passed like the infrastructure bill. He was involved in the Postal Service Reform Act that was passed. We were talking about parks earlier. He was really a leader in working with Democrats across the aisle to get a bill passed to restore and repair all the problems in our national parks across the country. So he's got a very strong record of bipartisan accomplishment. And I think it's just frustrating for someone like him to be in the Senate with the partisan pressures, the national, you know, political pressures that are on you, which makes it harder to see the fruits of your labor to get good bills passed.
I mean, I don't feel like I'm speaking out of turn to describe the current Senate race as bonkers. Like, yeah. Just, you know, of how they're just trying to outvie each other, and you know really this very, you know, this argument that was, there's not civil at a forum between them. I mean, do you feel like there's no more moderate Republicans left?
Well, I think you mentioned, Sharon, you know, the nastiness of the tone and the tenor, you know, people getting in each other's face and shouting each other down and not listening and not talking with each other. You know, there's only one Senate candidate to succeed Rob Portman on the Republican side, State Senator Matt Dolan, who's not in the Trump lane. And I guess we'll see in May, you know, how big that lane is, whether there is a lane for someone like Senator Dolan.
And along those lines, as Sherry's asking you, could you get elected today in today's politics?
Well, that's a very good question. You know, they'd probably be calling me a rhino. So, you know, there's always been, you know, splits in the party. And usually there was a conservative faction, and then there was a more moderate kind of centrist, you know, little kind of center right faction in the party. But I'm not sure there's much of a center right left either on the Republican side or on the Democratic side. It's not quite as severe at the state level, but it's becoming that way, following in the footsteps of the national division, the national polarization that we're facing.
Well, so could you or no?
Well, I think it would be a big challenge for someone like me to get elected as a Republican. You know, there's no middle lane out there. There's no third party. There's no, you know, moderate party. We're kind of divided into, you know, two warring camps, and there used to be overlap between the two camps, the Democrats and the Republicans, and now there's almost no overlap whatsoever. You know, the most moderate Republican is more conservative than the most you know, moderate Democrat. So there's no common ground, and it makes it very difficult to get the work done. I mean, just simple, you know, at the national level, you know, passing a budget on time, or you know, passing legislation to deal with immigration. Or dealing with the tough issues. You know, what about the solvency of Social Security, the solvency of Medicare going forward? That's going to affect many of our seniors. But there seems to be no attempt to really address those tough issues, which in the past were addressed across the aisle, where both parties stepped up to the plate. They were willing to take some risks, to work together, to make government work for the people it serves.
So, I mean, on a local level, I did want to ask you, so a person who has really been in the line of fire recently is not somebody that you think would be. Maureen O'Connor, our justice, and she, for her rulings, has just come. We're having this big fight over the representative districts, and it's really playing out in court. And there's been three separate times that state rep maps have been struck down, drawn by the Republicans, struck down by the court, trying to sort this out. And tell us about her, because you really, I mean, you chose her as your lieutenant governor.
Yeah. Maureen O'Connor was a really strong partner for me when I was governor. We chose her to run on our ticket because she was already accomplished. She'd been a county prosecutor up in Akron. She'd been a judge in Akron. She really knew the law enforcement issues, the criminal justice issues very well. And she was a strong campaigner as well. So we were fortunate to have her on our ticket. She served as director of the Ohio Department of Public Safety and did a great job after 9/11, focusing on homeland security, which was the priority at the time. She very, very, very independent and she took the initiative. We sent National Guard troops over to the Middle East, for example. She accompanied them on the plane. That was not a comfortable flight, but she went over with them. She thinks for herself. She's independent. And she's thoughtful. And, agree or disagree, she's trying to do her job as Chief Justice, interpret the Constitution, interpret the laws as she sees them. And then she gets, reviled by that. And people are talking about impeachment, which just for doing her job as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, it's one thing to disagree with a decision. It's another thing to say that a person doing their best to interpret the law, shouldn't serve on the court. That's what we want on the court.
That's a really slippery slope too, isn't it, to say we're going to impeach a judge based on their decisions.
Yeah. I'm concerned about, I don't know if Justice Pat Fisher, but he's from Cincinnati. He's a judge on the Supreme Court. He's done a really good job of interpreting the law. And he's up for election this year, and he could be defeated. There's a real question as to whether or not, we should elect our justices, but that's the way we do it. So they come under this kind of, political pressure. It's going to be interesting this year because, for the first time, at least in my lifetime, the political party of the judges will be on the ballot.
Yeah, that's right.
The party name will be on the ballot next to the person. So we'll see how that works out in the Supreme Court races and the other races down the ticket.
As Chief Justice O'Connor has been going through the decision, obviously the decision process on redistricting and sending it back to the redistricting commission multiple times, or being that kind of deciding vote, have you talked to her during this process? Have you given her any advice? Has she reached out for advice?
No. She's, as I said, she's independent. She thinks for herself. She's independent, and it wouldn't really be appropriate for me to provide advice on something like that. I mean, I've kept in touch with her, and she has replaced University of Dayton interns at the Ohio Supreme Court, and she's spoken to our interns, and she's overall she's done a great job as the Chief Justice, which is an administrative position in addition to being a judicial position, and I'm sure this was a very tough call for her, and I'm not an expert on the details of the language of the constitutional amendment that was passed by the voters. But she obviously looked at that and looked at the plans that were passed and concluded that, those plans didn't conform to the Constitution. So, that's the role of the judiciary as an independent arbiter, on matters of controversy.
So something that is also kind of before, all Ohio right now is the idea of capital punishment. And that was brought back when you were governor. Where do you kind of stand on that idea now?
Well, when I was governor, I felt that, you know, I should follow the law and carry out the law, and that, you know, the voters approved through their legislators the death penalty, and there were certain cases where juries imposed it. And so I thought I should respect that legal process unless there was a serious problem of, you know, error in fact or error in law. I did commute one sentence from death to life in prison because the new evidence arose after the trial that the jury was not able to consider. But, you know, having made decisions on clemency in many death penalty cases and thinking hard about it and being in the spotlight on that, it's given me a lot of pause for concern. So I have serious reservations about the effectiveness of the death penalty. And I have publicly opposed using the death penalty for certain crimes like felony murder. And I have deeper reservations about the effectiveness of the death penalty overall currently. And to me, it's probably on its way to extinction right now. As you know, executions are now suspended because there's no constitutional way to execute people right now in Ohio based on how you go about doing that. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, I'm for very strong and vigorous enforcement of the laws. But there's a real question about the value of the death penalty in today's world.
Is this something you think about? I mean, those decisions that you were made, do you think about?
Oh, I thought about it a lot because virtually every case, every death penalty case, and there were over 20, there was a request for clemency to the governor.
Mm-hmm.
So together with the, you know, the parole board and my staff, I spent a lot of time reviewing those cases and trying to make sure that that there was no basis for clemency, because obviously the death penalty is irrevocable. And it's one of the aspects of being governor that a lot of people don't think about, perhaps before you run for governor. But when you're governor all across the country, these are very challenging and time-consuming and important decisions.
Mike DeWine, I think he's been a really good governor. Do you what's your
Mike DeWine and I started running for governor the same year, 1989. It took us a while to make it. Governor Voinovich, you know, was elected in 1990. You know, Mike ran as lieutenant governor. I ran for secretary of state. And then, of course, in 1998, I was elected governor. And then quite a bit later, after he'd been to the U.S. Senate, Mike DeWine was elected governor, which I think was a job that he was seeking, you know, from the start. And I think Mike DeWine has been a strong governor. I certainly support him. I think he's made the COVID decisions were very tough. I had nothing like that, nothing so difficult as dealing with COVID, where you're making decisions every day that affect people's lives in such an immediate way. And you know, people, maybe you're not happy, they're not happy with all the decisions that were made, but I think Governor DeWine did the best job possible of steering us through the pandemic and also, you know, creating a healthy business climate for job creation, working on education, working on improving the lives of children across Ohio. And then, of course, the recent Intel decision to locate, you know, their new manufacturing facilities in Ohio is a very exciting decision and great news and a significant accomplishment for Governor DeWine to be able to attract a world-class company like that to create thousands of jobs in our state. So I have, you know, everybody's not happy with Governor DeWine. That's part of being governor. Particularly during an era like the pandemic and COVID. I think we were fortunate to have an experienced hand on the tiller during that period of time. Hopefully the voters will see it that way as well.
Yeah, I think they will. It seems like he's well on his way to another term.
Well, you can't take anything for granted in politics.
No, you're right.
Governor DeWine doesn't take anything for granted. He's the hardest working elected official that I've encountered in my career.
Really?
He never stopped working.
I mean, really? That's not hyperbole?
No, I'm serious. He's extremely, I mean, everybody works hard, but Mike DeWine is extremely conscientious and he's on the job.
Yeah.
All the time.
You, let's say age and life, where you're at in life doesn't matter. There's one job out there and it could be one you've already held, but what would be the absolute job you would love to have elected office wise?
Well, I just feel county commissioner wasn't exactly easy because you're working with two other commissioners all the time. So you have a majority of two and three players. So that was a challenge. But I think being governor is the best job in elected office because you really have the opportunity to get things done.
Yeah.
And even, you know, working, I was fortunate. I had a Republican legislature that didn't always agree with me, but a governor can shape the agenda on education, on jobs, on health care, on law enforcement issues, in a way that I believe makes a difference and improves the quality of life. Even, you know, let's talk about our state parks, which we started talking about at the beginning of this conversation. You know, we were able to buy North Bass Island, half Middle Bass Island up in Lake Erie, create new, you know, state parks and facilities up there. And that's going to last, you know, for generations. So you can create a legacy of improvements that affect people's lives in a beneficial way as governor, I think more than in any other job as an elected official.
Do you regret never running for president?
I like to think of myself as sane and having a lot of common sense. I never even gave it a thought. I think in this day and age, with the kind of scrutiny you're under, the kind of pressures that you have, the difficulty of working across the aisle and getting stuff done, I think someone has to really be driven to want to be president and to serve as president. I mean, I certainly admire people that aspire to do that, but that's not me. Governor was plenty for me to handle.
Sherry was. We were talking before we jumped on with you about and you ride your bike a lot, and it reminded me. I remember I used to go on the Great Ohio Bike Adventure.
And, oh yeah, that was a great. I love doing that.
Yeah, yeah. You came to my hometown, Galpolis. It was maybe early. You were in office, obviously, 2000. Yeah, the governor.
That was beautiful down there in Galpolis.
Yeah, and I remember so it reminded me, like, not about me, but just that you were really big into cycling, and you still do that today, right?
All the time. Oh yeah, I'm out there. You know, every day when the weather's good, I try to get out and ride my bicycle, and I try to ride on the trails because it's safer, and we have an amazing system of you know, paved off-road bike trails, hiking trails in the state of Ohio, and that's one of the accomplishments. It's not all about me, but we did a lot to build out the trail system in Ohio when I was governor through Clean Ohio money and, you know, transportation money and so forth. We have a beautiful trail system. And of course, I'm out there most often on a state park trail, which is that little Miami River trail. It's a terrific recreational opportunity and asset for Ohioans.
We can't have a Cincinnatian, especially one whose last name is Taft, on the That's So Cincinnati podcast without asking you a Cincinnati question or two, right, Sherry?
I agree.
Sure.
Sherry, do you have one up your sleeve? Or,
I mean, when you come, you know, when you head down this way, is there like a must-do thing for you when you're in the city?
Well, I love the parks of Cincinnati. We were fortunate to live in not Lookout, close to Alms Park. That's my favorite park. So sometimes I'll go there. And Cincinnati has, with the hills and the valleys, and the park system in Cincinnati, it's fabulous. And you know, the Hamilton County Park system is really terrific. I'm very excited. They're building a bridge now to connect the Little Ami Trail to downtown Cincinnati, you know, near Lunkin Airport. And so I'm going to be looking forward to riding on that trail when it opens up. So yeah, I just like the trails, and I like coming downtown to Cincinnati. I was just down there the other day. There's a lot of great history in Cincinnati. I like visiting, not just because it has the same name, I like visiting the Taft Museum, which is a great little art museum. Brother of President Taft, you know, lived there, and he and his wife collected that art. And also the William Howard Taft birthplace. I'll be visiting the birthplace next month for a naturalization ceremony where, you know, new residents of the United States will become U.S. citizens. That's going to be very exciting.
Outside at the birthplace?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's amazing.
I've done it before, and I'll give them a welcome, you know, from the Taft family. And it's, of course, the birthplace is a national, you know, park site, and the U.S. District Court operates the naturalization where new citizens become citizens. It's going to be a lot of fun because these new citizens, we've talked about the challenges and the polarization, but these new United States citizens are really excited to be here. They're excited to be in Cincinnati, excited to be in Ohio, excited to be in the United States. And that enthusiasm and energy that they have is truly inspiring.
Obviously, I mean, you never met your great grandfather, William Howard Taft. But you've certainly, you know, everything about him and his life. And is there a quote or is there a decision that he made while in office or not in office through his time, through his life, that stands out to you that it has made an impact on you and your life?
Well, first of all, you know, his belief and faith in the rule of law, and his belief in the justice system have really been important in my life. But, you know, he always wanted to be on the Supreme Court and to be Chief Justice of the Supreme Court rather than necessarily to be president.
Yeah.
Teddy Roosevelt and his wife were, of course, eager to see him as president, and he did serve as president, but he wasn't too happy. And there was a good quote after he left the presidency. He said, politics, when I'm in it, makes me sick. and it's kind of ironic. Then he did ultimately achieve his true ambition, which was to be Chief Justice. And that was as a result of another Ohio president, Warren Harding. And I'm good friends with Warren Harding's descendant, Warren Harding III, down in Cincinnati. So another Cincinnati connection.
Well, did you feel that politics, when I'm in it, makes me sick? Did you feel that same way, or do you feel that same way today?
I think I like politics better than I really like meeting people. And, you know, as you noted, I never ran for president. Maybe that's why I still like politics. but I enjoyed, you know, meeting people across Ohio, traveling the state, visiting our parks. You know, as I mentioned, it was just an incredible opportunity to be governor of a state like Ohio with great people, with such diverse communities. You know, from Cincinnati to Cleveland, Toledo, Dayton, Akron, Canton, Youngstown, all the small towns across Ohio, the rural areas, you know, southwestern Ohio being, you know, similar to Appalachia, really, in many respects. So it's just a fascinating state to be part of and to serve. So I enjoyed my time in government and politics. I can't tell you that I enjoyed every parade I ever went in, though. Parades can be tough. You know,
especially if you're walking, right? Not riding your bike or riding in a car.
I have ridden bikes in parades. Usually I walked in parades, but, you know, parade, you know, it's gone for a long time and you better be looking like you're enjoying it or you're in trouble.
Well, we certainly enjoyed our chat with you today, Governor Taft. And I know you don't, you know, you're living your life and enjoying life and staying active. And, you know, you don't do many interviews anymore, but, we really appreciate you taking really a lot of time here today to share about, what's going on with you and your recollections of many things in politics. So thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure, Jason and Shannon. Really a lot of fun talking with you, talking about my hometown of Cincinnati and talking about the state of Ohio and our wonderful park system. And you're right. I feel blessed to have been governor and blessed to still be enjoying life and being able to serve in different ways.
All right. Thanks again to Governor Taft. And before we jump into our Cincinnati moment of the week, which Sherry's got, she's ready to roll with that. I'd encourage folks to go check out the Taft birthplace, William Howard Taft birthplace in Mount Auburn, 2038 Auburn Avenue. It's part of the National Park Service, so it's maintained by the federal government. It is a fantastic site. Wonderful exhibits, very modern. They've done a great job of keeping up the buildings and the ground and the home, obviously where former President Taft was born. So check that out if you're into history, and even if you're looking for something to do, I would encourage people to do that. Anyway, shifting from one big Cincinnati thing to another, the Taft family too. Or that's so Cincinnati moment of the week. Sherry?
It's one of those days where, thank goodness, the podcast you can't see. I am very tired from opening day. You know what? You know, after 2 years of no opening day, I did it. Came downtown before the road closures. The parade starts at noon. You know, stood outside on like Ray Street the 9th and watch the entire parade, honestly. And it just was such a reminder of like how many great things are here. I feel like there's no group in Cincinnati that wasn't in the parade this year. And, you know, I do think they limited some years. And this year it looks like they said yes to everybody. I mean, after 2 years of not having it. And it was great to just, you know, see all of that, you know, hype and, you know, hometown enthusiasm. There's no politician that was not in that parade, I don't think. The city, you know, they brought the fire trucks and all, you know, the fire crews. And it was really a great day. You know, walked down to the banks, enjoyed the Dora.
Cool.
Holy Grail. You could not move down there.
Wow.
It was that crowded. And then, you know, went to the game where well, they didn't win, but that's okay. Yesterday wasn't about that.
Things,
at least for me,
things melted down there in the and then obviously some comments that were made by the COO of the franchise. So, but your experience, the opening day experience, I think, you know, overall with the parade, just going to the game, the pageantry was all back for the first time, right, since 2019, right? This concept of time is like.
Joe Burrow threw out the first pitch, and it was a little bit like a throwback of like.
Did you see? Were you in the stadium for that? Okay.
You know, and it was honestly like for all of that hype and what was happening there, I wanted to really get in there early to make sure I saw it, which is not always the case for like the opening pitch or whatever. It's like when you get there, but this was, you know, there was a deadline to get in there, see all that un-